Thank you for joining with us for another episode of Morning Briefings here on the Pipeline Intercession for the President and on our podcast. If you have any dreams that you have about the Office of the President, please send them to pip@christiancenterstreetport.com. We're so thankful that you all have joined in with us on this prayer journey, and we look forward to standing with you not only today, but in the days ahead. So with that, we'll go ahead and join today's broadcast as we talk about the news and stand on the wall for this nation and the Office of the President. Good morning, everyone. Zach Arskanen coming to you live from North Carolina, and today we are back with another episode and more so a time of prayer for this nation and the Office of the President. And again, I want to go back and remind ourselves, and more so for myself, to just check our emotions at the door, as Lord Scripture tells us, to be of sober mind, so that we can be aware of what is going on in the times and seasons we are living in. And today I want to continue on our study of reordering our day, going through Scripture and looking at the key times when the Lord reached out and communicated to those throughout the Bible on how the Lord orders his day so that we can get in alignment with him. And today the passage, it's really two chapters, the verse of the day is really more so the passages of Daniel 8 and Daniel 9. And through Daniel 8 and 9, Daniel's given visions and dreams, and he writes them down in the third year of King Belshazzar of Babylon. And so but I want to give context to what timing, because 8 and 9, especially in the New American Standard, doesn't really give when these things occurred. But if you go back to chapter 7 of Daniel, you see in the beginning, Daniel talks about how, or more so when these things happen. Okay, the visions of the night. Is it early night, evening, whatever the case may be? And then, okay, let me pull this back up. So we see in 7 that Daniel has a vision in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon. And then it goes on to say in verse 2, it says, Daniel said, I was looking in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven. Okay, so the passage here to look at is to give us context is verse 2. It says, I was looking in my vision by night. So then when we go to chapters 8 and 9, where he's given the vision of the ram and the goat, and he's given the vision of the horn, the little horn later in Scripture, and the interpretation of the vision, and so on and so on. And then in 9, which is kind of the key critical point of the prayer for his people, we see that this is in that alignment of preparing for the ordering of the day. And so what we're seeing here is another example of how when we get in those right alignments with the Lord throughout our day, that he will cause encounters to occur so that we can know and understand the times and seasons. So we see our prayer point for this that Chuck points out. He says, ask the Lord to visit you in the evening watch. This is the time that perhaps you will see angels. And so as we're in this season of in the wilderness, of being in that place of peace with the Lord, providing us that strength we need to go into the next season of now, as we've reordered our day, we've assessed our times. Let's, hey, Lord, ask him. Visit us in the evening watch. Give us dreams. Give us visions. If you're encountering a slumber, a cloud over yourself through these last couple weeks with what's going on in the earth, you're having struggle sleeping, just ask the Lord, hey, Lord, I just want to come to you. Prepare me for the midnight watch. Prepare me for the day. Prepare me for what's coming ahead. Let me be in tune with what you have called us to stand for and to be prepared for what's coming, not only now and in the season ahead. And so as we keep our emotions in check, this will help us get in that alignment with the Lord to prepare us for what is occurring right now in the earth. So we want to see here through this understanding, this foundation here, as we reorder our day, we look at what's going on in the world. And I guess I need to go away for the weekend more often. That way more things can happen with what happened with Twitter and Elon. And I'll get to that here in a second. But I first want to talk about the update. That's what's going on in Ukraine and Russia, because there are some events happening today that I think we need to be aware of. Not necessarily bad things, just information things that I think we can understand how this administration stands and what decisions they might make in the future regarding Ukraine. So the news came out really early this morning that Russia is continuing to pound eastern Ukraine, the Donbas regions, taking over a couple other cities. There's a report I read this morning where Russia has started to bomb train stations in central and western Ukraine. So they're far-reaching. They're going after huge economic sectors within Ukraine, and we're seeing that to continue to be the type of warfare that they're in. If you saw reports from this weekend, mass graves being found outside of Mariupol, completely just devastating to see happen. But what happened over the weekend that is because of this Twitter stuff is kind of going under the radar. That I want to kind of bring a highlight to is that Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and Secretary of State Anthony Blinken went to Poland and Ukraine along with about 20 other lawmakers to the Ukraine-Poland border to see what's the humanitarian crisis that is there, just at the border, not going, some going in to Ukraine, some not. And so what we're seeing is the response coming out of those meetings, which are interesting. And I think heed the warning of why we need to pray for this administration, for this White House, and for the leaders that are leading this scenario happening around the world, is that Lloyd Austin came out in a strong, strong remark, came out and said that the U.S. wants to see Russia weakened to the degree that it cannot do the kinds of things that it has done in invading Ukraine. And they want to basically just demoralize Russia. That could be a misfire. That is not necessarily the best strategy when dealing with a nationalistic country like Russia, who their people take very strong pride in as Americans. They're patriots. As we are patriots for our country, their citizens are patriots towards their country. This is part of the reason why Putin is doing what he's doing, is because he has a pride of getting the country back to its former Soviet stronghold within the world. So this is something that's very alarming to see coming out of Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin's mouth. Then you also have on the Russian side, this is from the Wall Street Journal, you have Russian's foreign minister Sergei Lavrov saying that the risk of countries like the U.S., Europe, NATO, arming Ukraine is very serious. It should not be underestimated. He's quoting him. He said, under no circumstances should a third world war be allowed to happen, and there could be no winners in a nuclear war. And he's saying this because he's saying, look, if you do this, we're potentially going to use nuclear weapons, which would be devastation. That's could be a Cold War strategy that he's using there. It could not be with the position that Russia's in. We'll see how things actually play out here. but is things are starting to get more intense with Russia and the United States. And so it's something to pay attention to, pray for wisdom. And then you have now House lawmakers who are returning from their trip from Eastern Europe who are saying that they believe the war has just begun. Those are some of the same sentiments that Zelensky's saying, so they could just be repeating that. There was Representative Marcy Kaptur from Ohio ended up coming out and saying that we potentially need to not only do humanitarian support, but potentially more military support, not just sending them weapons, training, and of the such, but possibly more, as similar to what Chris Coons was saying, of potentially sending troops in. That's still yet to be determined. And look, we need wisdom from the Lord. That's the decision to make. That's what we need to seek very seriously about praying for and standing for. So we wanted to pray for and intercede for the Biden administration to have the fear of the Lord and listen to the Holy Spirit and those who are advising the president, who surround him when dealing with Russia, Ukraine, Israel, and China, because it all kind of plays in together as they're still negotiating the potential getting back into the Iran nuclear deal and then dealing with China and the economic sanctions that the U.S. is putting on Russia, which there's news out of that this weekend that Russia has now started to, and this is a report from the Wall Street Journal, Russia has is blocking economic data from being reported to media outlets and allowing, the goal is to prevent Western media and countries from knowing how the economy within Russia is doing, and really who are their trade partners, where are they getting their sources and funding from, because if they get back with Iran and as Iran starts allowing more armings and bombings and terrorist actions to be done around the world, does Russia want to be aligned with that? Does Russia want to be openly aligned with China and to where it ties back to, so they can potentially put sanctions on? So this, it's kind of the Iron Curtain has gone back up a little bit. So you don't know what's going on within Russia. So it's something to see there. And then some information for us to pay attention to today is that Secretary of State Anthony Blinken will be at 10 a.m. So right when we're done here in the Committee on Foreign Relations, testifying about what happened and what he saw and some of the negotiations that happened in Poland about Ukraine and Russia with the other EU leaders and such. So that's something to pay attention to. What would be his advice? What would he be saying? Is it different than what Lloyd Austin's saying? He really has been mum on it. He's been talking, okay, we need to, you know, send some more support, but what to what level? And that's what we really want to be praying for our leaders there. Something to be paying attention to about him, because we have prophetic that this Biden administration is trying, they're trying to silence him. So we want to see what he's saying. Does he have the fear of the Lord? He seems to be the one voice of reason in this administration on these issues, surprisingly, but he is there and we want to pay attention to him. So that will, I'll put a link to that if anybody wants to pay attention or see. There will probably be reports about it later today and tomorrow about that. So that's something we want to pay attention to. And we also want to look at the issues surrounding our southern border. And last week we talked about the deal that Greg Abbott signed with the Mexican governors about them stepping up and helping prevent this surge of migrants crossing the Rio Grande and the border, and the unfortunate events that happened this weekend of the National Guard member who lost his life saving, which is two traffickers who were believed is what the Mexican authorities said. And so this could be the reason why this report came out, where and really these actions came out, where Mexican authorities are seen actually trying to prevent migrants from stopping and coming into the United States via the Rio Grande. Interesting to see, is this because of the National Guard? issue, or is this because of the deal they made with Greg Abbott? Honestly, I don't care. It's about time they stood up and did something. Either way, something's being done from the Mexican side. And we'll see if this holds out. Will the, you know, another 100,000 who are coming up in May because of Title 42 being withdrawn, will that cause them to back down? Will it just be too much to inundate them for them to be able to handle? We'll see. Something we want to pray for on that issue. And then also there's another issue involving Remain in Mexico policy that I think we really, really need to pray for and pray about. This is a Golden Court case. We haven't talked about Golden Court cases in a while, but the issue is evolved around whether DHS has the authority just to write a memo and say we're going to remove Remain in Mexico. They've been losing these court, the Biden administration has been losing these court battles because no, you don't have the authority just to write a memo. You have to go through the legislative procedures to remove Remain in Mexico. Or the president himself has to write an executive order. It can't just be DHS Homeland Security Advisor Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas just writing something and saying, oh, yes, this is done. And that's what this case is about. The case is about whether he has the authority to do such a thing. Now, the Biden administration could get Remain in Mexico removed if they so choose. It would be a lengthy process that they're trying to avoid. And what's interesting is that they can get this type of procedure allowed. This now gives the power of the pen, not just to the president, but to officials of any alphabet soup department within the federal government. So this case would be huge if allowed to go into effect. And meaning that if Alejandro Mayorkas, a unelected official, is allowed to just write a memo, write some procedure, do something, and he is able to change national security policies without going through the legislative process, or even, heck, not even having President Biden write an executive order, an unelected official would be able to do this. This is something we really need to pray for, a Golden Court case here. And we also want to pray for their advisors around the president to have wisdom, to advise the president on how to secure the southern border. We saw the case yesterday of temporary reprieve from the case of Louisiana, Texas, and Missouri, I believe, AGs and other states joined in about preventing Title 42 from being removed. And the ruling was is that, look, the Biden administration needs to have a plan if they're going to remove this. And right now they don't have a plan. Again, it's temporary in the case that they want the Biden administration, the courts want the Biden administration to come up with a plan about what to do. So we'll see what happens there. Something, again, pray about on this issue. Pray for wise leaders to surround Biden, officials to stand up, speak out, not be afraid in this season, because now's the time to speak up. Now's the time to say something. Be the Esther. This is the moment to speak out or, you know, forever hold your peace. So we're seeing some issues come to the forefront. And then I want to point out this next story, something just to watch. And then I want to end on some the Twitter news and some other good news, some things that are happening around the country. So we're seeing today, really this week, that the Senate Foreign Relations, the Senate is moving forward. Overall, Senate is moving forward with voting on Fed vice chair and other seats, and really the Fed chair, Jerome Powell, of whether to confirm him. Now, the reason I want to point this story out is because next week, the Federal Reserve has meetings where they're rumored and have come out and kind of played their hand a little bit about raising interest rates. Too little, too late. We'll see. And this article from the Wall Street Journal talks about how there are paths for Lael Bernard, who was a potential for being the Fed chair instead of Jerome Powell, who got renominated for another 4-year term at the top of the Fed. She will be the vice chair in hopes of potentially in the future, some other president, this president, whatever, of being Treasury Secretary. And then there are others who are being nominated who were prevented from being nominated because of Sarah Bloom Raskins, which was a whole debacle. And thankfully, the senators had some wisdom, and more so Joe Manchin. It was really his voice of standing out and standing up against this. And the reason we want to pay attention to this is because they could try to rush these people through this week so that they could be on the board seats for the coming vote next week of whether to raise interest rates or not. They're against it. Economically, it would be a wise decision for the Federal Reserve to raise interest rates. They're talking about raising it a half a percentage point, which is not that much, but it would cause interest rates on loans, car loans, mortgage loans, any type of loans to increase. And the car loans and mortgage loans have already started to increase in anticipation of this. And so we'll see what happens in the long run if these four people are actually allowed to get on, because they're hawkish on whether to raise interest rates. They think, just let it happen, keep interest rates low, allow people to continue to overleverage themselves, which has put us in this position that we're in the first place. And so there's a whole thought process on whether the Federal Reserve should do that. I would agree with that. I'm a free market capitalist. I say let the market deal with itself, and also let the market pay the consequences of the decisions that they make. And that's where the Federal Reserve steps in to hopefully try to prevent that. But I digress. And so something to pay attention to about these nominees, and more so the Fed meeting May 3rd and 4th, and what decisions come out of that. Again, it's rumored rising interest rates. In the short term, that'll hurt people. In the long run, it'll ultimately help. They need to continue to increase it to get ahead of inflation. You're talking 10 basis points, percentage points, that they would have to raise it up to get ahead of inflation right now, which is believed to be 8.5 if you're looking at CPI, 10 to 11 if you're looking at PPI, which is more of a closer term scenario of understanding the economic markets. But I digress. Now I want to talk about this issue with Biden. I mean, Biden, White House, Twitter, Elon Musk. So we're seeing now that, good news, Twitter is now owned privately by Elon Musk. There are people on the far right who are saying this is a bad thing. And look, I warn, Twitter, Elon is not the holy grail of investors and somebody you would want. But he is coming out and saying, look, I want free speech. I want open algorithm. I want to know what's going on. I want public to know what's going on. And I want to verify who these users are to ultimately get rid of bots. And so those are good things. Trust him and verify. Going back to the old Ronald Reagan quote. But the interesting thing coming out of this is that there are those on the left who are saying this is a bad thing. How can we have free speech? How dare we allow people just to be able to say what they want? Now, with that shows that what they're saying, and I'll put a report, there's a Real Clear Politics article about this that talks about how the reaction from those on the left talking about the concerns of Elon Musk is that they're more worried about control than safety. And there are a great article showing that some of the things that the Obama administration or the Obama campaign was allowed to do in 2012 of basically ciphering off user data off of Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. But yet Trump did the same thing, and he used a company to do it. And then it was bad for when Trump did it, but it was okay if Obama campaign did it. Talking about how the situation is very similar in this case of how they want control, supposedly, of free marketplaces. And so you're seeing this whole dust-up happening. And look, we'll have to see whether Elon actually follows through with what he says. Will it be more of a challenge? Are there people in there who will prevent him and stop it? yet to be determined. Will he clear house and then hire new people? It's going to take time. You're already starting to see last night people come back, their accounts being reactivated who were then censored. And I say this, and the reason I said let's keep our emotions in check at the beginning is because we're really in the season ahead. If these people, some of these people who were quieted, come back, it is going to cause ruckus. It could cause confusion. If you believe 100% what everybody says, free speech doesn't mean that truth is 100% told 100% of the time. Free speech allows for freedom of speech. And that's what Elon Musk says. He says, I want even my adversaries, my most hated adversaries, to continue to be on Twitter and continue to speak. But what that also causes is that's going to cause a lot more things to be out there in the Twitter sphere, in social media sphere, online. And because when news stories, if you read any news story, they're always quoting what somebody said on Twitter. This person said this. This person said that. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's just, it is the open forum for discussion in today's society. And that's why there's been such a huge battle over it. And so we need to be aware of when some of these people come back from the far right, that they may say things, and they're called trolls, if you know what that means. They say things just to spark debate, spark problems, and there are people even currently now who do that. It doesn't necessarily mean that what you read is 100% true. So we're going to have to learn to keep our emotions in check, discern what is being said, and ultimately let the test of time play out. The test of time will prove what is true and what is not. And so you have some people upset, oh no, Elon's evil because he does some bad things over here. And while that may be true, it doesn't necessarily mean he's not the right person to deal with this issue. God can and will use anybody in any situation who is willing to be used. And look, he wants a free and open marketplace when it comes to Twitter. So that is the understanding of where I believe we need to be of, look, this is good. But let's also understand it's a two-sided coin of free speech is happening, but also you're going to have more information that you're going to have to decipher through and be wise in discerning what is happening. And now I want to end on some good, really great news. Two things. One, in Florida, Governor DeSantis has signed a law bill that is creating a police unit in Florida to deal with election crimes. And you say, well, why would Florida do that? Florida has a good record. Wrong. North Florida has a good record. South Florida, on the other hand, has a lot of issues. And I lived in Broward County, and I was firsthand in seeing the illegal actions taken by certain election officials in Broward County. That person still remained in office and then did the same exact thing the next election. So there are a lot of things that happen even in a state where Florida, who this article talks about from the Daily Wire about how Florida has some of the best elections possible. It's good. Maybe it may be the best, but there are still are issues. So then this leads into, even though there are states passing these election reform laws, getting rid of Harvard ballasting, Zuckerbucks, and having nefarious issues being involved, that even a state like Florida, who does have a very good record on being able to make sure the riffraff of the elections, the scrupulous actions are toned down to a minimum. And just because you pass these laws doesn't mean that it's 100% bulletproof. So this is a good thing there. And then in Georgia, I think this is even bigger news, is that there are now investigators from Georgia, Secretary of State's office, Brad Raffensperger, who want to identify people who have been caught on phone. Even someone who is a John Doe who has publicly, more so privately, two government officials come out and talked about the ballot harvesting, the cell phones, the 2000 Mule film that Dinesh D'Souza is involved with, and talking about how they're going to investigate this. They're going to look at this because they want to end ballot harvesting. They want to look at what is actually going on, what happened, how deep did it go, and to reveal the corruption that was involved in the last election. Now, this is huge because Raffensperger and other state election officials who said there was nothing that happened in the last election, but yet they secured new laws to uphold the integrity of the elections in Georgia, even though there was nothing that happened, which, yes, that's very confusing. But this is – we can knock him for that all we want. But at the end of the day, moving forward, this is a great decision, something that will deal with exposing the corruption not only in Georgia but could lead to exposing the corruption in Michigan, in Wisconsin, possibly Arizona, possibly Nevada, because this stuff is happening in Pennsylvania. This stuff is happening whether people want to look into it or not. And something needs to be done about it. Look, we have no problem with what the outcome of an election is if it was shown to be legal. There are questions that still have yet to be looked at, and this is part of the looking at it process. Now, does that mean we can go back and overturn the last election? Again, there's still no legal precedent to do that. I'm not saying it can't or won't be done. I'm just saying right now there is no legal precedent to do that. So something would have to change constitutionally, which you get into a whole scenario there, that in reality, the decisions that are being made right now look like they're just going to try to reform the election process, look at the past elections to see what was done, set up laws to prevent things from happening, which is why you see Governor DeSantis doing this, which is why you see Georgia looking at these ballot harvesting issues and absentee ballots. And I want to read this paragraph, and I'll close on this. The interesting thing, let me blow this up, because this is quite alarming, is that Raffensperger looked at some of the numbers between these elections. And he looked at how the absentee ballots, the reason it's a problem, and Representative Austin Scott of Georgia told Just the News, he said, quote, so one of the things that came about from that is that you look at Barack Obama, who got 85,000 absentee ballots. Hillary Clinton got about 100,000, Stacey Abrams got 135, and Joe Biden got 850,000 absentee ballots. And so I think that anybody who would look at those numbers would reasonably agree that we need to know who's voting in these elections. And that's the point of digging into these investigations, of looking at the uptick of absentee ballots, where they're coming from, who these people are, which is why the voter integrity laws that Georgia put in place would help deal with some of this. And it's good that they're going to go look back, because if you don't know how things are done at a proper legal level from those within the state officials, then you don't know how what to look for in the next election so things can continue to go on. So this is very, very good news. It will expose some things in Georgia. Don't be surprised if some names that come out. And look, this is important because Georgia has governor's races coming up. Georgia has Warnock is up for re-election. Local state reps, local officials, federal officials. I think this is a huge moment for Georgia to expose this stuff. It's huge at this time with Twitter being potentially allowed to have the free speech moving forward. So we need to see what happens, what comes out of this. Stay patient, stay aware, be sober, keep our emotions in check, and let the truth come out. This is a part of the test of time. The question, the statement is, if there was nothing done wrong, what does it hurt to look? And so from the right and from the left, this is the stance that everybody needs to take. Of let this truth come out. Again, we believe some things will be exposed, and it'll be for the better, not only for the state of Georgia, but for this nation to dealing with some of the issues that occurred, not only in this last election, but have occurred for several elections in the past. So with that, I close. Thank you to everyone if you're following along. Don't forget, we put this up on podcast, Podbean, Apple, Spotify, and Google if you want to listen and share there. And we'll be back today online this week only for our noon prayers, praying for this nation and God's will, getting this nation back to spreading the gospel of the kingdom to the nations. So blessings, and good to be back, and I will see you all later. Have a good one.